Kia ora koutou. I am Darryl Ward and I have been writing about science for many years. I've also been an Anglican preacher the past 15. Today, science and faith are both important parts of my life. This might seem odd, even contradictory. But is it? Today I'm going to explain why I believe science and faith can not just coexist but get along. I'm primarily drawing from astronomy and related branches of science and Christian scriptures and tradition, because these are where most of my knowledge and experience of science and organized religion come from. However, the issues I'm discussing are relevant to all science and also to people of all faith traditions, as well as people of no faith at all. Relations between the worlds of science and faith can be fraught. We all know what happened to Galileo when he challenged the Church's view of the universe and was forced to recant his teaching of the Copernican view of the solar system, even though his discoveries did otherwise. While the Church may have come to accept that Galileo had been right all along, scientists cannot readily be blamed if they reject religion. Yet Brother Guy Consolmagno, director of the Vatican Observatory, reminds us that science and faith used to be very close.
The first scientists were clergymen. Today, religious institutions from universities to the Vatican Observatory support professional science, and the proportion of scientists who are themselves believers mirrors the fraction in the general population. Science is based on the religious assertion that creation is orderly, free from the interference of nature gods, and worthy of studies. So who continues to push this myth of a conflict? What is their agenda?
What is their agenda indeed? Most of you will be familiar with the Big Bang theory of cosmology. Which is now almost universally accepted among scientists. But how many of you know that its fundamental principles were primarily formulated in the 1920s by the Reverend Monsignor Georges Lemaître, a Belgian physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Catholic priest? Lemaître lived at a time of increasing tension between science and organized religion. The fact he is simultaneously a priest and a scientist was bewildering to many, and he had to struggle to defend the Big Bang theory against critics who accused him of being religiously motivated. But Lemaître saw no need for conflict.
Should a priest reject relativity because it contains no authoritative exposition on the doctrine of the Trinity? Once you realise that the Bible does not purport to be a textbook of science, the old controversy between religion and science vanishes.
But if anything, the tensions between science and faith have become worse. Prominent atheists like Richard Dawkins and the late Christopher Hitchens have become stars of sorts, attracting many faithful disciples who hang off their every word. They would have us believe that atheism is the epitome of rationalism and reason, while faith is at best seen as silly superstition and at worst considered downright dangerous. Much has been said about the supposed incompatibility between science and faith, such as this gem from the late particle physicist Victor J. Stenger.
Religion and science are like oil and water. They might coexist, but they can never mix to produce a homogeneous medium. Religion and science are fundamentally incompatible. They disagree profoundly on how we obtain knowledge of the world. Science is based on observation and reasoning from observation. Religion assumes that human beings can access a deeper level of information that is not available by either observation or reason. The scientific method is proven by its success. The religious method is refuted by its failure.
Stenger and others who hold this opinion are correct in their view that science is based on observation and reasoning, but they seem to forget that just because a hypothesis or a belief cannot currently be proven or disproven does not make it incompatible with science. What matters is that it could be proven or disproven when the necessary evidence becomes available. They also often fall into the trap of assuming what people believe, such as that being a person of faith automatically means being a person who rejects scientific method. And that is certainly true for some, but it is my experience that they are the exception, not the norm. There are many arguments offered up by those who believe that science and faith are irreconcilably incompatible with each other. One is the belief that people of faith trust their sacred texts over observation and reasoning. And to be fair, some do. Answers in Genesis, a fundamentalist evangelical Protestant organisation best known for its Ark Encounter and Creation Museum, popular tourist attractions in Kentucky and the USA, promotes the view that the Bible, or at least their version of the Bible, is God's infallible word, and that any alternative perspectives are man's faulty assumptions.
The Bible, the history book of the universe, provides a reliable eyewitness account of the beginning of all things and can be trusted to tell the truth in all areas it touches on.
While fundamentalists who believe in biblical inerrancy may be a minority in Christianity, they often seem to have the loudest voices. But biblical inerrancy is not the prevailing perspective among practicing Christians. And I really love what writer Madeline L'Engle wrote.
I take the Bible too seriously to take it all literally.
The recently deceased Bishop John Spong also made an important point.
Again and again, we discover painfully that our central Christian affirmations make assumptions based on a literalized view of the biblical narrative that are no longer believable. Hence, when we cast light on those assumptions, they fall apart. They're not based on a reality we can grasp or believe.
Now, scriptures are not entirely allegorical. Part of the Bible, such as the accounts of the travels of St. Paul and other leaders of the early church, are based on historical events. We know from the writings of historians about the rapid spread of Christianity in the Roman world in the early part of the Common Era. But other parts of the Bible, such as the two creation stories and great flood story in the book of Genesis, are not, in my view anyway, literal descriptions of actual events. Rather, they are stories and traditions that helped the ancient Hebrews make sense of things they could not understand. The second argument is that belief in a God or a higher power directing the universe instead of the universe following the laws of science is untenable. Although these arguments can often be emotional rather than rational. Richard Dawkins is particularly known for making comments like,
"I am not attacking any particular version of God or gods. I am attacking God, all gods, anything and everything, supernatural, wherever and whenever they have been or will be invented."
But despite claims to the contrary, science has never disproven the existence of a divine entity. I would suggest the fundamental laws and forces of the universe can be seen as expressions of a divine force at work. But that is not to say that they are synonymous. As Lemaître noted,
"Omnipresent divine activity is everywhere, essentially hidden. It never had to be a question of reducing the supreme being to the rank of a scientific hypothesis."
A third argument is that belief in some kind of spiritual realm that is separate from our earthly existence, which may be the dwelling place of the divine and or the destination of deceased souls, such as heaven or paradise, is sheer fantasy. And I will agree this sounds pretty far-fetched. But let's go on a journey back in time. In the late 19th century, physics was an assortment of different fields that had little, if anything, in common with each other. That all changed a century ago, when German mathematician Theodor Kaluza and Swedish physicist Oskar Klind independently developed a theory that managed to unite the previously unrelated theories of gravity and electromagnetism. But this required the incorporation of an additional fifth dimension on top of the three physical dimensions we can observe and time. The holy grail of physics is to unify and explain all physical phenomena in one single theory. Physicists haven't quite got there yet, But Kaluza and Klein's work has shown that bringing theoretical higher dimensions we cannot directly experience into consideration can have some interesting outcomes. Now, I'm not going to suggest the obvious and say higher dimensions can be equated with the existence of heaven or any kind of afterlife or abode of divine entities. But I will say, though, that if science can propose the existence of higher dimensions that we cannot directly perceive, it would not be unreasonable for science to accept the possibility of there being a spiritual realm that is distinct from our physical world. Remember how I spoke earlier of how just because a hypothesis or a belief cannot currently be proven or disproven does not make it incompatible with science, and what matters is that it could be proven or disproven when the necessary evidence becomes available? Well, this applies to both science and faith. The church did not disintegrate when it finally accepted that Galileo had been right all along. Because faith is allowed to ask questions, have doubts, and it accepts when it is shown to be wrong. Otherwise, it is not faith at all, but blind acceptance. I believe that faith can complement mainstream science with new perspectives, like shining a light on a subject at a new angle, just like art, literature, and Ngāti Māori can. And this is to the benefit of both science and faith, not to the detriment. I'll leave you with this thought. We could plough through a stuffy textbook description of the Big Bang, but if we don't allow ourselves to be confined to narrow meanings of words like God, don't the first three verses of the book of Genesis say the same thing but much more magnificently?
In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.